This is an extract from the Nature podcast. For the full show, head to nature.com/nature/podcast.
Next, Adam Levy takes a look at Antarctica's past.
Marine geologist Klaus-Dieter Hillenbrand has been visiting Antarctica for over two decades. Part of the appeal is that the southern tip of the world is one of the few places where you can still feel like an explorer.
During my first expedition in 94, we discovered a new island, which was very small. But where can you do something like that on Earth these days?
There's still lots to learn about Antarctica, and that knowledge is key to understanding how seas will rise as the planet warms. As we've discussed previously on the podcast, there are wide ranges of model predictions for the Antarctic's contribution to sea level rise, in part due to uncertainties about which physical processes will take place. One way of pinning down what might happen in the future is to look into the past. That's exactly what Klaus-Dieter has done in a new study, which looks at how one ice sheet varied over the past 10,000 years. He joined me in our studio in London to discuss the new work. But first, I asked what the most important drivers of ice loss are in Antarctica.
The most important factor, as has been shown over the last 20 years or so, is oceanic warming, actually. So the warm ocean water, which is actually melting very efficiently the floating parts of the ice sheet and where the ice sheet actually meets the ocean.
You mentioned that a lot of this issue is from warm water melting the floating part of the ice.
Yes.
But the floating part of the ice itself won't necessarily contribute to sea level rise because floating ice, when it melts, doesn't really raise the seas.
Exactly.
So why does that actually matter?
The problem is that the floating parts of the ice, the so-called ice shelves, they are buttressing the ice in the hinterland. Ice shelves have collapsed in the 1990s and the early 2000s. After they had collapsed, what happened was that the ice sheet in the hinterland was actually accelerating its flow. And this is the mechanism which is so important for our current and our future sea level.
So that's something we know has happened in the recent past. But you guys wanted to see whether it had happened in a similar way in the more distant past.
Exactly.
And how do you begin to look at that before we had satellites, before people were on Antarctica? How do you unpick that kind of thing?
Yeah, so before any man set his foot onto the continent, the only way then is to look into the climate archives. And I'm a marine geologist, so naturally what I'm looking at is looking at the records on the seafloor. What you see is actually deposits left by the ice sheet in the past on the continental shelf when the ice sheet was more expanded in the past. To date them, what you have to do is then to collect sediments. And we have done that, for example, for the Amundsen Sea, which is the sector where we have the most dramatic changes today, and got quite a good idea how far expanded the ice sheet was during the last ice age, so between about 18,000 and 12,000 years ago.
I can see it as fairly intuitive that you'd be able to reconstruct what the ice was doing at various points in time, but understanding what warm water was doing over the distant past seems like something that would be quite a lot harder to do.
What we need to look for that is actually looking at the remains of organisms which were living on the seafloor. So very important for us are carbonate shells, which are unfortunately very rare. However, geochemical analysis of these shells, they give us a clue about the properties of the waters which were present at the time when these organisms lived there. So, and when we can establish a timeline, what the water was doing in particular time periods. It's not easy because these shells are very, very tiny.
And how rare and how tiny are these things?
If you think of just sand, they have this sand size, but they are extremely rare. So we have sediment cores which are 10 meters long, and we have sift hundreds of samples and didn't find any of them.
But once you've collected these shells, you now have two data sets, one which is showing how big the ice sheet was at different times, and one showing when there were these warmer waters. Does looking at them confirm that the warm water was linked to shrinking the ice sheet? I know that's something that models simulating the last ice age have suggested should be the case.
So, what we have done in this first step, we could show that really when the ice sheet retreated, when we had this warm water incursions. And so we could show that really this mechanism was the dominant mechanism in driving ice sheet retreat during the last 12,000 years and at the end of the last ice age.
I know there's a lot of disagreement in projections about what's going to happen in Antarctica over the next hundreds of years.
Exactly.
Does this help tie that down and help us have a bit more certainty about what might happen over coming decades?
Yes, because we know the driving mechanisms, the main drivers for ice sheet retreat. The next step would then be really to get numbers to these warm water incursions so that we know how warm the water was, which we then can use for also the future predictions. We really need to know what will affect the ice sheets in the future and how will it influence our life as humans on Earth.
That was Klaus-Dieter Hillenbrand, who's based at the British Antarctic Survey in Cambridge. For more on researchers' efforts to predict Antarctica's future, check out the episode of the Nature podcast from 31st March 2016.